Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing in life because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. Excuse me, by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, please go to pnwa.org. Let's see. Well, I'm back after a two-week hiatus. I holidayed. I got sick. I got better. And now here I am talking to you. Over that time, I had a lovely little interview was conducted with me by a novelist, Lisa Furno. She's got a book coming out on Valentine's Day. And Lisa conducted an interview with me about my book, Write Within Yourself, An Author's Companion. And she did a great job. It's a very informal chat, but you can find it on her website, lisafurno.com. It's spelled L-I-S-A-F-F, as in Frank, E-R-N-O-W. We were in a restaurant. It was live. It was improvised. And I thought it came out quite well. So check it out if you'd like, lisafurno.com. Yeah, though I don't always go into it here on this program, one of my goals, if you're a writer, is to actually help you write better. I take a somewhat psychological approach, somewhat emotional approach to reaching that end. But today's guest, editor extraordinaire Elizabeth Lyon, takes a more hands-on and practical approach. She owns Elizabeth Lyon Editing International and has a wide variety of clients, all kinds of success stories, but she is also the author of numerous on writing, including Manuscript Makeover, The Sell Your Novel Toolkit, A Writer's Guide to Fiction, and most recently, Writing Subtext, a little booklet on how to write subtext, available at Amazon, Kobo, Nook, among other places, I believe, also in paperback. And she is here with me today to talk about all things writing, editing, and whatever else occurs to us. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. I know that you got into this whole editing gig kind of accidentally, didn't you?
I did. I'd been dabbling. I'd been doing some, but really it came about through the tragic death of a close friend who was an editor, and I inherited his business.
Wow. And you accepted this position. You didn't have to do it.
I did. It was very much like the hero's journey. At first, I couldn't fathom accepting it, and really, then after I woke up, and I went, I've always wanted to do this and teach writing.
Wow. And so, but you had been writing, you must have been writing on your own up to that point.
I had been writing since I could hold the big stubby pencil in third grade.
Elizabeth, do you know that is the average age most writers know that they want to write? What do you think about
that? Really? I didn't know that. I did not know that.
That is an informal... this is based on all my interviews with the writers I've done. And generally speaking, around age 9 is when people look up and say, this is something I want to do. And that's when it lit up for you. Why did it light up? Were you an avid reader?
Well, I was an avid reader and a journal keeper. Perhaps that kicks in then because I started keeping journals, did for decades. And And I think just to always just knew that from early on. So perhaps there is something like destiny.
Maybe so. But what was so interesting about it to you?
Love of language, the words, hearing them tumble in my head and thinking about them and how they sounded. I was also a musician, so I think I've always thought of words as music.
They are. You know, they really are. I also have a musical background, and when I really discovered poetry, I found the perfect meeting point of my love of sound and language, because language has rhythm, and it has ups and downs and stops and starts and pauses and rhyme even, and I made that connection right away. It's really quite, it's beautiful when the thing sounds like what it means. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, and I think having been a musician and perhaps reading to some degree with all those elements of music has helped me become a better editor.
And how has it helped you become a better editor?
Well, I think I'm listening. I'm listening to the prose. I'm using my senses for where I think there should be a pause.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, you're a poet, and I think I'm sensing how the words go together or don't, the harmony, dissonances,
right.
The counterpoints.
Right.
Where should it be staccato?
Yeah, very good. Because while there is an intellectual element to writing, for sure, so much of it, in my experience, is intuitive and felt and learned the way you learn balance, the way you learn timing. It's not something you can learn. It's not a science, I don't think.
I agree. It's important to learn the left brain stuff in terms of
sure.
Kind of the rules of craft, but I agree. I think it is very intuitive, and maybe to some degree you are tuned into it or you are not.
Yeah. And so as an editor, so clients come to you, are you mostly sitting down with their manuscripts, going through them as any editor would and saying, here's how I can improve it? What do you do with your clients?
Well, I've settled in over the years into my favorite kind of editing, which is substantive. So even though along the way with the manuscript I, you know, correct the line editing, that's not my favorite thing to do. And developmental,
yeah.
Which it would be earlier in terms of conceiving the story, is also not my favorite thing to do. So I like to get in there when somebody already has a draft, and I do prefer to work on hard copy, and I'm writing all kinds of things in the margins, making some suggestions between the lines. I used to write an evaluation on 100 pages. I limit it to the first 100 pages of a novel or a memoir. And then I used to write a single-page evaluation that was often 40 pages long.
Wow.
So I've trimmed back on that. So, but I want to address all the elements of craft and and model.
And
I like to take sections of the writing and take that they've written and go, here's what you've written, here's what I mean by how you could revise for this element of craft. So it's modeling and teaching in the evaluation.
Right. So do you like the teaching element of it?
Say again?
Do you like the teaching element of your work?
Yes. I think I like probably like that most of all.
Right. Well, of course, your books are really teaching books, aren't they?
Yes. Yes, they are.
And
one person once told me that they read like an engineer wrote them.
That like an engineer wrote them?
That's
Did you
what
take
one
that
person
as a compliment? What do you think about that?
Yeah. I like the idea that it was that clear.
Right. Right. And your books really address concrete questions about either the craft of writing or the business of publishing.
Yes.
And how, I mean, are those books written based on the questions you have seen come up again and again and again with your clients and with your students? Are you still a writing teacher? Do you still teach in the classroom?
No, actually, I've only been a freelance teacher all these years.
Okay.
From the time I inherited the opportunity to become a full-time editor, I also inherited the opportunity to be a community college continuing ed teacher. So
right.
From the time my books began to come out, my teaching is all through conferences and private workshop weekends,
right.
Or weekend workshops. But yes, the books are completely informed by students and editing clients and their work. So it's I harvest the problems I've run into, and
right.
then I'm an old farm girl. So and then I study it and try to learn as much as I can, and then I put all of that into my how-to books.
And do you see? So I teach also, although I tend not to teach as much craft, although I do some of it. I teach this other sort of, I don't know, I guess you can call it psychological and emotional end of it. But even there, I find I come up, I encounter the same set of challenges that the students are facing again and again. So what do you see coming up most often in, say, if you're teaching, do you teach a class on fiction, say?
Oh, yeah, that's very broad. Usually an aspect of that.
Yeah, so let's say scene building.
Oh, scene building. Yes, I teach that.
Yes. And so what challenges do you see come up so often with your students that what comes up again and again and again when you deal with the fiction end of the writing, of the student writing spectrum?
Well, I would say it all boils down to not knowing the character well enough. I've discovered the strange thing, maybe you've seen this too, which is the last character to emerge as fully developed and interesting is typically the protagonist. So
yes.
You would not think that, but that's true.
Yes.
You found that
yes.
too.
Yes, often.
No,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, helping being an editor is being a psychologist. And I have a master's degree in counseling, and I love studying human beings. And that, I think, is what also helps character development, because, after all, writers are trying to accomplish a verisimilitude with their characters. And to do that, they have to delve into the psychology of what motivates the character, what's happened in the past, and therefore why they would act in a certain way in the plot.
And don't you also think that so often the protagonist is a kind of avatar for the writer themselves in some form or another, that they and that is the biggest challenge in letting them be, it's, I think, flawed usually is the thing that they is missing, you know, the quirks, the holes in their character, their holes in their thinking. That's been my experience. How about for you?
Yes, I fully agree. And there's a phenomenon that happens is that the writer may not recognize that their character is a projection, is an avatar.
Yep.
And therefore, there's a delicate situation as an editor in talking about the character's flaws and motivations, because that might be striking close to home, or them are ending up doing therapy.
Yes. Yeah, I remember I don't enjoy this process that much. It's always challenging for me, but I was judging contest entries for this big contest we have every year. But I do the best I can. I always want to be helpful to the entrants. But one time I was judging this book that I've been given, and the protagonist, I just found him loathsome. And I felt I could not decide, because I felt quite certain that the guy thought he was really cool and, frankly, maybe was him. But I found him just despicable. And I didn't quite know how to say it. And I don't think I pulled it off very tactfully, to tell you the truth. But I couldn't help it. He was just such an unlikable fellow. But I felt that he was probably a representation of what he thought he was like, maybe. But I didn't have to deal with him face-to-face or even directly at all. But you have to do that.
Yes, and I have run into that. I run into where the character and probably the person has some anger, rage to get out, and they make their character unlikable, or the drinking problems come up, any of the emotions taken to the extreme, that the person really needs a catharsis, so they create this character in order to experience it. But the reader really is not that interested in that kind of journey.
No, because, you know, I've been thinking about this because I've been reading memoir
lately because I'm writing it, and I just have been interested in doing interviews with memoirists. And it's been my experience as a reader, and I think about this when I'm writing it, it's my experience as a reader that I am always the protagonist in the memoir. And it doesn't matter if it's a guy my age or, as often the case, a woman much younger or much older than me. I become that person. That person's struggles are my struggles for that time. And I identify with them.
Yeah, I have a theory. Yeah, you may already exist too. I have a theory that we're attracted to certain stories more than others because the universal experience or need that that character or the memoir the writer has had closely matches one we've struggled with or seek. And so some books, they might be well written, but we're not just interested. And it could be because we're not plugging in to that particular issue or emotion.
Yeah. It could be. Of course, in my case, I get what comes across my desk. And so sometimes my own tastes don't factor in much. But I for sure think that as we seek what we are looking to read, we're trying to find those stories to help us answer the questions we need answering. I feel quite certain of that.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever they are. Do you find, this is such a standard rule in a way of writing. I can't stand even the concept of rules to some degree, but boy, it is applicable. And it's one I find myself having to teach again and again and getting into again and again, which is the old concept of showing and not telling and what that really means and its place in a work of narrative. Do you find yourself having to teach that to your students and clients?
Well, it's very interesting because that's been around, as a saw, a canon of writing, show, don't tell. And that is something to teach. However, I realized that there was another step that often comes later in somebody writing, which is to tell well and to show tell.
Okay. All right. What is that?
Well, narration is telling. Whether it's description, feelings, whatever, most people know. Narration, and it's necessary to be able to tell well, to narrate. And you look at many, many books, and they may have more narration than they do action or showing. And I've forever had people, students, say, well, how come so-and-so can get away with it? How come they can have all this telling, and you're telling me I've got a show? And the full building of a character and a story, a layering in, comes through actually a lot of narration as well. And so it's yet another skill set to go from show don't tell to then tell well, and then to mix them even within a sentence so that the action is carrying the information.
Yeah, it's really true. It's funny. I just got done. It's going to be up in our January issue, which will be up on the 15th, give or take. An interview I did with the memoirist and memoir teacher, Theo Pauli Nestor, who's got a great book out called Writing Is My Drink. I do recommend it to anyone who hasn't picked it up. But she was talking about writing memoir, and I thought it was really interesting, and I agree with her. She said memoir is a lot of show, but also some tell. And her version of tell, and I feel it's the same for me, given the kind of inspirational writing I do, is at some point part of the draw towards memoir, not quite as Angela's Ashes, which was really just a novel in memoir form, but another kind of memoir like what Anne Lamott does and what Theo does, which is I want the opportunity to say, and this is what I think. Now here, let me tell you what I believe is, the ability to step onto the soapbox for a moment in a way. And that's really just telling. And I found I certainly do that in my work, but you have to find its place and you have to know how to do it. You have to know how to do it.
Well, and in contrast, a novelist, it comes off as a soapbox if they have their character start to tell the reader what the author thinks.
That's right.
So very
it doesn't
different
work
form.
In fiction. Yeah, no, it doesn't work in fiction, but it is palatable, I find, in the memoir form, in the non-narrative nonfiction form.
Yes, as long as it's not banging people over the head with a message.
Yeah. No. No, hopefully not. Now, do you work with memoirists ever?
Yes, I do. Actually, I've found over the years that most freelance editors who aim to do this full-time have to be generalists, so they typically take in you know, many different kinds of fiction and memoir as well, and and also other, I take other forms of nonfiction. And I would place it as around 15 years ago, the memoir by the non-celebrity took off, and the doors opened, and suddenly I began seeing many, many more. So I would say now it's perhaps a third of the manuscripts I received to edit our memoir.
Wow. Well, I think it's an interesting form. It's a class I teach, and it's pretty popular, and I've got all my theories about that. But what when you edit the memoir, what is some of the challenge you typically see reoccurring with the fledgling memoirist?
Well, I guess to some degree it's not that different from someone building a protagonist in a novel. Often what happens is that the narrator has not developed themselves in enough depth, and so the focus may be on what happened and some immediate reactions to it, but getting to that deeper level of motivation and what the blind spots are, why this particular story is the one that rose to the surface to tell among all the other ones in our life. So it's really character development when you come down to it, and thinking deeper than the usual places we stop in self-reflection.
Reflection, yeah. Absolutely. It looks like we have a caller who would like to ask you a question, Elizabeth. Let's get him on. I think I know who it is. Jeffrey, is that you?
Good afternoon, Bill. Happy New Year to you. Another wonderful
show. Thank you.
Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello, Elizabeth. I hope I came in a little bit late. I hope I'm not repeating your question. But, Elizabeth, where you teach the craft of writing, you teach putting writing subtext. Great books, by the way. I was just curious about your writing process, your daily. What's a life like in the day of your writing?
That's a good question. What is the life, the day in the life of Elizabeth Lyon? What is it?
Oh, my. Well, a day in my life is often spent working on clients' work and not my own. And, you know, it's a very seductive thing to become a writing teacher and an editor when your heart also wants to be a writer. And in a way, it's the ultimate excuse because you know, you're already swimming in all this creativity of someone else. And I don't write on a daily basis for me. I have to carve out pockets of time, and those usually correspond to when I know there's a deadline in my critique group. I'm 100% believer that critique groups are kind of fundamental to development. So right now, for instance, I'm this Thursday, it's my turn in the critique group, and which means supplying my critique group members with, this time I can submit up to 30 or 40 pages because I backed out and I have a double. And so presently I'm working on the next booklet, which is crafting titles. But what I have been doing to some extent last year was, of course, I have a memoir in process. Every baby boomer does. And so I would alternate, sometimes bringing in new scenes for the memoir, and other times bringing in instructional material. So for me, it really is catch as catch can, and I would give myself, you know, a D in terms of reliability. I do think the best way to make progress is if you can write on a daily basis and write for as many hours as you can. But that just hasn't been the way my life works.
You know,
in February, I hope to go away for a week. That's another thing, is just completely going away to write. So I'm going to go on a writer's retreat with some friends in mid-February.
How often in work with your clients and students do you find yourself dealing with issues that really have very little to do with writing and just simply human confidence and human questions of voice and value? because I run into that all the time. Of course, I go looking for it, but I think it would be, I feel as though it would be there anyway.
You know, I can't say that that has been something that I run into very frequently. And I don't know if that's a function to some degree of my fees, to put it that way. You know, with lower fees and in my own development as an editor, writer, and teacher, then I was working with many more beginners and aspiring, and that's where the insecurities abound. So I would say I run into that seldom.
I see.
Now, I do run into people who may not know that they should have those insecurities. But
you don't feel it's your job to point it out to them.
No, or when I do, it's not fresh news, and it's easily accepted and worked with.
Yeah. So, Elizabeth,
sometimes when I send back a harsh criticism, I don't hear from somebody for a while, I start to worry, and I'll write a little email, you know, I hope that you haven't jumped off a bridge, you know.
Right. And has anybody ever written you back saying, yes, I did jump off a bridge, as a matter of fact? I live.
Well, occasionally I have somebody be angry with me, but I haven't had anyone suicidal.
Good. Well, that could be one of your taglines for your business. So far, no one's suicidal.
I was going to write a book about being an editor called A Million Little Edits.
Very good. All right. Listen, I got one more question for you.
Okay.
And I want you to finish this sentence for me. You ready?
Oh, dear. Okay.
You can do it. Here we go. It's, if writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what?
If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me it's my journey to sanity.
It's your journey to sanity. I like it. How did you figure that out? How did that come to you? In what way is it a journey to sanity?
Well, if I'm not writing, then I'm getting off balance and emotionally grouchy. And then that can go in directions that aren't great. But when I'm writing, then I'm home. And it feels great, and I'm happy. So it is my sanity.
Amen. Boy, I'll tell you, what a good answer. Elizabeth, thanks so much. Thanks for being on
the
show.
You're welcome. This was great.
It's writing subtext, yes?
Writing subtext and soon crafting titles.
Writing subtext. Thanks again, Elizabeth.
Well, thank you, Bill. Have a great day.
You too. Yes, it's our sanity. Writing is our sanity. And I believe that because to be sane, you must tune into yourself, where you can receive the kind of answers you need to lead your life. And the answers can never be tallied up like a sheet of numbers. You just find the right answer within you. And writing is all about finding those answers that are right for you and really no one else. And those answers that are right from you and just you, that is, in fact, in your home, just like Elizabeth said, that is your sanity. To leave that home is to venture out into madness. So go home, everybody, and be sane. Next week, I will be talking to Kim Fu, the novelist. Until then, do what you love, write what you love, and you'll be home. Thanks a lot.